Hey Danny, thank you very much. I really appreciate you all being here today for the media call. It's been such a fantastic 2025. World's End is the final pay-per-view of what I think has been a fantastic year for AEW, the wrestlers and staff and the company and our fans. And I'm really excited to talk to all of you about AEW. So I want to get as many of your questions in as possible. If you don't get to answer, or excuse me, if you don't get to ask a question today, hopefully I'll get to answer a question for you at the scrum or the next call, but I'll try to answer every question I can. And with that, Danny, we can just start answering questions.
Sounds great, Tony. Thank you. First up, we're going to have Samantha Shipman with the Daily DDT, followed by Brian Zillum with PW Torch. Samantha.
Hi, Tony. How are you?
Very well, Samantha. How are you?
Good, thank you. So this sort of relates to World's End, but so this morning we found out that Andrade will be competing for another promotion, but it is New Japan, so it is a promotion that you have a partnership with. Is this a sign that he could be closer to returning to AEW, or has there been any progress towards that?
Oh, I absolutely have great respect for Andrade. I think we all would like to see Andrade back here, and I think very much there's a lot of respect on both sides and a lot of interest on both sides. So I think everybody should stay tuned for what's next in AEW, and his next move is something we're all going to be keeping an eye on. So it's a great question. Thanks for asking.
Thanks, Samantha, and thank you, Tony. Brian Zillum with the PW Torch is up next, followed by a write-in from Jim Barcelone with the Miami Herald. Brian?
Hi, Tony. Can you hear me okay?
Yeah, hey, do you hear me okay?
I sure do. Thanks, and happy holidays to you and your family, Tony, and everybody at AEW.
You
Tony,
too.
I appreciate that. Timeless Tony Storm is one of AEW's most clearly defined characters in the company. Fans know exactly who she is the moment she steps on screen. Chris Statlander, who's wrestling this Saturday on the pay-per-view against Jamie Hayter, her in-ring work is undeniable, but her on-screen presentation has shifted quite a lot the last couple of years. Creatively, what opportunities do you see to further define her presentation so fans can connect with her more consistently, like someone like Timeless Toni Storm? Thank you.
That's a great question. Chris Statlander is an incredible, incredible wrestler, and I think Timeless Toni Storm is an incredible wrestler too. They're very different people, in and out of the ring, but I think they're both in the ring. They're both two of the most talented grapplers, and not all wrestlers necessarily do you want to have the same speaking styles or the same ideas of presentation. Certainly, those are two wrestlers who have a very different style in and out of the ring. And what's great about wrestling is you want people from all different backgrounds and styles. So I have a lot of respect for both of them. And I think they both are very true to themselves and have evolved a lot over the years from where they were when they arrived in AEW or from even long before that, years earlier in their very young careers. So I think they're both tremendous. I really love working with both of them. I think they bring different skills to the table in and out of the ring. But it's been fun to watch both of them evolve and take different paths to become world champions and two of the top stars in the promotion for somebody like Kristen. Chris is somebody who has been with AEW basically from the beginning, from our first year. And Timeless Toni Storm being somebody who joined us as a free agent, but has been one of the top stars in AEW for years. And in particular, since she's discovered her timeless side, truly one of the top stars we've ever had here in AEW, one of the most popular stars, and I think one of the most talented stars in the ring as well. So thanks for asking about that. But I do think that Chris Statlander is an incredible world champion. And I think that she's really evolved and become a better and better wrestler. And we've seen her tap more and more into her personality. And, I think everybody here in AEW is really proud of the work she's done to get to this point because she has, to your point, she really has found much more of herself and become much more comfortable as a talker and as a presence on the TV show. And she's always been a great athlete and a great wrestler, but I think all of this has helped Chris rise to be a great world champion. And I'm very excited to watch Chris Statlander take on another former champion, somebody else who's held that world title that Chris holds, Jamie Hayter, another really popular star and somebody who's evolved a lot from when they first started in AEW. Somebody else who was in AEW in the very first year is Jamie Hayter. And Jamie Hayter came into AEW. She looked a lot different, and she's certainly had an incredible evolution herself throughout the years in AEW, in and out of the ring. And she's somebody else who we're very proud of and think is one of our greatest stars and somebody you can look at and hold up as an example of being a professional and hold up as an example of what it means to be a star in AEW and somebody that the fans also really, really respect. And I'm very excited about Chris Statlander versus Jamie Hayter for the world championship at AEW World's End very, very soon, just days from now. Thank you for asking.
Thanks, Brian, and thank you, Tony. I have a write-in here from Jim Varsalone with the Miami Herald, and after that, we'll go to Jason Powell with ProWrestling.net. Tony, Jim writes, what's it like having MJF back, meaning what does he mean to the company, and having him right away in the main event?
Well, it's great to have MJF back in AEW. I'm glad you asked. MJF is an incredible pro wrestler. He's one of the best talkers as well, but he's somebody who certainly has not only been a champion in AEW, somebody that from the beginning has been a presence on the show and a very recognizable figure. And I gave earlier an example of somebody who came up in their first years here and have evolved. And these are all people with different presentations and some different skills, but certainly a great example of somebody who's changed and continued to develop as a great pro wrestler is MJF. Now, he's one of the greatest talkers, but I also think he's a fantastic wrestler. And he inserted himself into a situation now that already is very explosive. MJF is walking in there with three world champions, three guys that I think are also on that same very top tier of professional wrestling. Three great champions already in this match with two former champions in Swerve Strickland and Hangman Page, as well as Samoa Joe, this incredible, insurmountable double world champion. And I think it's already a fantastic situation we had with this three-way match we had shown that is going to be a rematch from AEW Revolution last year. And then for MJF to come back and make his presence felt and add himself officially as the fourth participant by executing the contract from the Casino Gauntlet match at AEW All In Texas, I think it's very, very exciting and adds another explosive element to the AEW World's End pay-per-view this Saturday, December 27th. So there are so many things I'm excited about with AEW World's End this Saturday, and certainly the World Championship fight with Samoa Joe versus Swerve Strickland versus Hangman Page versus MJF is a huge, huge aspect of why I'm very excited about World's End this Saturday.
Thank you, Jim, and thanks, Tony. We have Jason Powell with ProWrestling.net up next, followed by Ricky Chino with the takedown on SI. Jason.
Yeah, hey, Tony, have you considered moving the Continental Classic to a different time of the year just to avoid this holiday stretch where you have to do tapings instead of live shows and show times are getting bounced around? Like, the tournament feels like it's AEW at its best in a lot of ways, but the timing just makes it a little trickier for people to keep up with.
Well, it's a very interesting thought. I'd love to keep you engaged here and talk to you for a moment about it, if it's okay, sure. if we can have an interactive question. I think that's very interesting. Certainly, I think it's really nice to have awesome programming around the holidays. And also, I think it does if you want to have a very glass half full perspective on some of the benefits when it could be a challenging time to bring viewers in around the holidays, I think it gives an attraction to the shows. It provides something really strong when, even though there might be other aspects of the holidays that are very, very important, like spending time with your family, which is first and foremost for so many people, and rightfully so. And when there are a lot of important things outside of professional wrestling to also be doing around the holidays, I love that there's awesome AEW wrestling that is a draw for people. And there is a great tradition of professional wrestling around the holidays. We all know that Thanksgiving and Christmas and these times have also been, at times in America, very strong for professional wrestling. And we see professional football do huge ratings. I'm on the fan engagement and major events committee of the NFL. So we get very insightful data and information analyzing ratings patterns on big holidays. And there is viewership. And I would love it for people to want to watch AEW, potentially, I hope, with their families and friends on the holidays. And having great wrestling on these days can be, I would hope, a draw and make people watch AEW. And certainly that is always the goal, and make these must-see episodes when there could be an incentive, watch these episodes around the holidays and make a must-see programming, and just like big sporting events that happen on these holidays and are associated with these holidays, like big football games and such, make them part of the holiday season and try to make that a positive. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it does. Is it as simple as maybe having a women's tournament as well, and you do one of them at this time of the year and then hope that a different time of year will attract a different audience? It'll just be easier for people to keep up with?
Yeah, potentially. I mean, there's a lot of things you could try. And I think that I really like the formula we've had here, and expanding certainly the men's and women's wrestling and trying new things. I love that. So there's a lot of things we could potentially try here as far as the scheduling of the tournament or tournaments. But in this case, I really do like having the Continental Classic around the holiday season. I think it provides a lot of really engaging and interesting wrestling content to follow at what is, in my own personal opinion, a really beautiful time of the year. And I always associate the holidays with pro wrestling. I have my whole life, and I think there are people who do, because there have been historically in my childhood or dating back to before I was even born or able to watch wrestling. There's a history in America of big pro wrestling around these holidays of Thanksgiving and Christmas. So I do think having the Continental Classic around the holidays is great. And for the women and men in AEW, there are certainly other interesting times of the years where we could look at where the tournament would serve us best. But I do think it's a very, very cool thing we have going with the Continental Classic. And I love the holiday season, and I love that we have this tradition that we built right now. But I do think it could serve us well at just about any time on the calendar, because the wrestling is so good. But I like where we have it now, and I think it adds something really special to this time of the year, particularly the stretch from Full Gear to World's End.
Well, thanks for the insight, and happy holidays.
No, you too. You too. And I appreciate that question, which I thought was a really interesting question. And it's a fair points by you. Thanks for asking.
Jason. Thank you, Tony. Ricky Chino with the Takedown on SI is up next, followed by Andrew Badala with Final Bell Media. Rick?
Hey, Tony. Good to chat with you as always.
Thank you. You too.
Really looking forward to this women's tag team championship match this weekend. Really enjoyed the tournament to crown the inaugural AEW women's tag team champions. As you know, I'm a big fan of the Babes of Wrath. I'm just curious. You had a lot of great options of to anoint as the inaugural tag team champions. What made Willow and Harley the right ones to carry those belts for the first time in your mind?
Well, it's a great question. I think Willow and Harley really earned that opportunity to be in this tournament, and they worked very hard to be the winners. They're very popular with the fans. Willow has been a great champion in AEW before as a singles wrestler, but I think the Babes of Wrath have great chemistry as a team. They are up against an incredible challenge this weekend. They will be facing two awesome champions, two awesome singles champions. Of course, the Ring of Honor Women's World Champion, Asuna, this dominant wrestler, teaming up with somebody who's been a nemesis at times, but also has a lot of chemistry as a tag team partner for Asuna, and that is the TBS champion, the CEO of Mercedes Moné. And this is four great individuals. I think it should be a great tag team match. And I really think that the Babes of Wrath both work very hard. They bring very different skills in and out of the ring. They have very different experience levels, Willow and Harley. But together, they work really hard. They're very positive and fun. And whether it's the TV audience or the live crowds, people really seem to enjoy it. Them, I think they're tremendous, and I think the Babes of Wrath are fantastic representatives of AEW. So for many reasons, in and out of the pro wrestling ring, I think the Babes of Wrath have been fantastic choices to be the first ever AEW Women's World Tag Team Champions, which is a spot that they've earned. Thanks for asking.
Thanks, Rick, and thank you, Tony. Andrew Baidala with Final Bell Media is up next, followed by Bill Pritchard with WrestleZone. Andrew?
Hello, Tony. I hope you're well. Merry Christmas to you and your family.
Merry Christmas to you.
As we wrap up 2025 and look ahead to 26, what specific goals or milestones are you hoping to achieve with AEW? Are there any particular metrics or accomplishments you're focusing on to ensure success in the new year?
Well, that's a tremendous question. I think there's a lot of things we do that are very important to the success of AEW, but most important, first and foremost, is putting on strong events and keeping a great relationship with our fans, which I think that we do have right now. We've got incredible wrestling fans supporting the shows worldwide. We have a massive, massive following really, when you think about it, it's amazing how media gets consumed all over the world. And to have people in 150 countries watching the events and to be able to go travel to new markets and see fans in places that we've never traveled before that are so excited to see AEW and it's our first time there, that's really fun and exciting. So I think it speaks to the huge following worldwide that we've built. And we've expanded and had some great international growth. And as I mentioned, we've seen some new markets in person and expanded our media coverage in there. We've had huge growth in our TV audience worldwide over the years in terms of adding new markets and even in places that are really important for AEW in terms of having a great connection with the fans and TV and live events. We've seen our viewership go way up in the UK in particular, which is really, I think, bodes very well for us because we'll be returning for AEW All In London, Wembley Stadium, where we set the worldwide record for the most pro wrestling fans ever to buy tickets for an event, sold 81,000 plus tickets at Wembley Stadium in 2023. And I can't wait to go back again in 2026. And our viewership in England in particular has grown so much that this year we are up, I believe, 60% for AEW Collision year over year and up 54% for Dynamite year over year for those great audiences. And again, I think that bodes really well going back for All In at Wembley Stadium. And this year it's been really so important to us to have a successful launch on HBO Max. It started with the streaming of the TV and pay-per-views. It was at first January 1, we began with the TV, Fight for the Fallen. And since then, every AEW Dynamite on Wednesday nights and every AEW Collision has streamed simulcast on HBO Max, along with Wednesdays on TBS for Dynamite and our big Collision shows on TNT. And then, of course, expanding the pay-per-views to HBO Max later in the year with All Out. And I think that's gone very, very well. The pay-per-view quality and the delivery process has worked really well, and we've gotten great feedback from the partners at HBO Max. And again, that's a newer relationship for AEW. We've worked with PBS and TNT for many years. It's a very important milestone we set this year, looking back, that we became the longest running primetime professional wrestling show ever on PBS or TNT, or both. And I think that was a great milestone that shows how many years we've put in successfully on TBS and TNT, but now we're also working with HBO Max, which is massive. So it's been a great year, and we'll continue, hopefully, to set new milestones next year. Thanks for asking.
Thanks, Andrew, and thank you, Tony. Bill Pritchard with WrestleZone is up next, followed by Mike Johnson with PW Insider. Bill?
Hey, Tony, how are you?
I am fantastic. It's probably the easiest question I'm going to get all day. How are you?
I'm doing good. Good. There's a lot of speculation about AEW's position in this bidding war between Netflix and Paramount for Warner Brothers Discovery. What can you say to kind of clarify, like, where AEW stands in that whole thing? Or have you had to address that as far as like on the talent level?
Well, I mean, I've certainly spoken to the media a few times at the end of the talent, which I think to say we're in a fantastic position. I know that we'll be here at TBS and TNT for over two more years, you know, for all of 2026 and 2027. We know we'll be on TBS and TNT for television, as well as streaming on HBO Max. And the future of media and the landscape certainly is in a very interesting time. And AEW has always been there to navigate these changes with our fans. So we've certainly been through some different regimes. And right now we're having, I think, our best period, our best relationship. And it's yielded the most important results yet with the great launch of AEW pay-per-view on HBO Max and the growth of the shows, not only expanding the program to simulcast events on HBO Max and now pay-per-views streaming as well, but also even the expansion of the programming. When Discovery came and Warner Media became Warner Brothers Discovery, AEW's only gotten better and received more and more benefit as a result of the changes. And we've navigated these things very, very well. I'm thrilled with the current leadership of Warner Brothers Discovery and our partnership with this leadership. I'm very grateful to Mr. David Zaslav and Mr. Bruce Campbell and everybody at Warner Brothers Discovery, Ms. Channing Dungey, and everybody there. I have to say that they've been so fair to us and also allowed us to grow and expand. Even the addition of AEW Collision, which is such a huge part of the AEW calendar, 52 weeks a year, where we have some of our very best wrestling and wrestling matches. I think that AEW Collision is a must-watch show, in my opinion. I love it, and it's a highlight for me every personal week that I love going to Collision. I love working on it, and it's really cool because Dynamite is a show that I had conceived when I was 12 years old and have been writing Dynamites for fun in the back of classrooms, in Sunday school, in confirmation class, in college, in NFL meetings for many, many years before I was a pro wrestling promoter. I would sit and doodle and draw out ideas for Dynamite. Long before I ever actually was able to work in pro wrestling, I always wanted Dynamite to be a show. And it still blows my mind that it's become the longest running primetime professional wrestling show ever on TBS or TNT for Wednesday Night Dynamite to reach that milestone on these incredible channels that have the richest history, in my opinion, of professional wrestling in the history of the United States of America, dating back to 1971, and certainly an incredibly rich history that existed long before AEW launched. And Dynamite, it, is a dream come true to be able to work on that show. And it's been a huge part of my life since I was a young boy. Collision is something that came up later, and it was Mr. Zasloff that brought the idea to add more AEW, that he wanted another 2-hour AEW show, and that he wanted AEW back on TNT as well, because Dynamite is such a strong performer and a flagship show on Wednesday nights for TBS in primetime. And his thought was, I want to bring Saturday wrestling back. He wanted to bring AEW back into TNT as well. And that is Collision. And the show has done very well for us. And it's also where some of our best action and best rivalries unfold and take place. And it's a home to great action and AEW wrestling. So I'm very grateful to the leadership of Warner Brothers Discovery. And I know that as we look to the media landscape, I think it's a very positive time for AEW. And I know that our future is very secure for years to come, and we'll be constantly evaluating and looking for the next chance to expand and grow AEW. And I look to the partnership with TBS, TNT, and HBO Max, and the great leaders like David Zasloff and Bruce Campbell. We're very fortunate to work with them, and they've been big supporters of AEW, and they continue to support AEW. So I think all that bodes very well for us. Thank you for your great question.
Thank you, Bill, and thanks, Tony. Mike Johnson with PW Insider is up next, followed by Sean Ross Sapp with Fightful. Mike?
Hello, sir. Happy holidays to you and the family.
Hello, sir. Happy holidays to you and your family.
Well, thank you. I wanted to follow up on something Jason talked about, which is the Continental Classic. And he noted it feels like it's AEW at its best. And having been at the Hammerstein over the weekend, I feel the same way. Like, I feel that tournament is probably the best iteration of the Continental Classic to date. So I want to ask you about booking this, because this year, especially with so many talents and competitors still viable mathematically as we head into this week's TV before it airs, that could not have been easy to figure out the wherewithal. So I'm curious, what's your booking philosophy when it comes to the Continental Classic? Do you figure out where you want to be and move backwards? And especially when you've got a situation like Darby that comes up, there's a lot of moving pieces every week. How do you put this thing together, and how have you mastered it over the last couple of years as you've gotten more into the groove with the concept?
Thank you for asking. I really appreciate that. Well, I think it's been a tremendous year in AEW. And the Continental Classic is, to me, an incredible way to cap off AEW after we've had so many great things happen in 2025. What an amazing way to spend the holiday season with these big Continental Classic matches. So I'm glad that you've enjoyed the event, Mike, and thank you for attending the show. And it means a lot to hear from somebody that's so knowledgeable about pro wrestling and has followed it and worked in the space for so long that you think this is the best tournament yet or the most interesting one. That goes a long way. And to hear that you thought those were excellent events and that it's an exciting and interesting tournament right now, that's tremendous, and it means a lot to me. So thank you very much, Mike. The tournament, I have thoughts on the big matches and the big rivalries and the stories that can unfold throughout the tournament. I have thoughts throughout the second half of the year. I start thinking about it in the summer. The Continental Classic is a huge part of AEW, and I think about it months in advance about some of the big ideas I have for the tournament and start sketching things out. And then I follow the situations with injuries, and injuries can affect a lot of things. They can affect who might be good for the Continental Classic, but also who will fill in spots throughout the company in the months leading up to the tournament. And even getting into full gear, I'll have ideas for what could be the field and where some of the big matches could take place. And if there's an injury at full gear or that week, it might make some changes to my ideas, but I have a sketch of what I'd like to see. And coming out of full gear, it's become my tradition to look at everything and put together all my notes. And the first year I really enjoyed it. I sat down with Brian, and I had all the wrestlers. I listed everybody into the groups, and I had what I was looking for, but I did sit down and put some of it together collaboratively. The last couple of years, I have gone out of the Full Gear show. I've sat alone in a room with papers all over the place. And last year, I thought the tournament was actually better than the first year, but there were so many scenarios that unfolded, and I loved it. I thought both tournaments were tremendous. So there was something in both of them for everybody, and great action in the Gold League and the Blue League. And I thought I had a pretty good process coming out of Full Gear last year, but I had to make some changes even last year with injuries going into the tournament. And at the beginning of the tournament, there was one substitute. I'm very fortunate that there's only been one injury substitute, and I'll talk about why in each of the last 2 years. The first year, with Juice Robinson getting injured, we lost a tremendous wrestler out of the tournament. Juice Robinson's a big star in AEW and somebody I think can be a champion here, and hopefully I'll get to talk more about on this call, because I think Juice Robinson, whether it's singles or tag teams or trios, anything he does, I think Juice Robinson and really everybody in the Bang Bang Gang does a fantastic job. But with him as an example, he was out injured in the Continental Classic last year. Commander came in as a replacement and did a fantastic job, and then in the end pulled off one of the greatest upsets yet in the history of the Continental Classic on the final day, and shocked everybody, but also did something that really affected the outcome of the tournament and who advanced to World's End. Also, last year I made a change that I think has been really positive, making the semifinals a new matchup with the Gold League winner versus the Blue League runner-up, and the Blue League winner versus the Gold League runner-up. And this year, it was on the very first day, had a big injury. And I love Darby Allin. I think Darby Allin's one of the greatest professional wrestlers in the world. We're very fortunate to have Darby Allin in AEW. And Darby Allin is somebody that I was really excited to have back in the Continental Classic. He was in some of the best matches in last year's tournament, and he was in the mix and in the race for a top spot down to the final day. And absolutely, Darby Allin, you know, even down to the last match, which was in 2024 for him at Hammerstein, a 20-minute draw with Ricochet, where Ricochet wrestled a style that seemed to maybe intentionally turn the fans against Ricochet. And he only needed a draw to advance, and you saw Darby chasing the 3 points, whereas Ricochet was almost stalling out the clock, trying to escape with the 1 point he needed to go to World's End. And I thought that was a lot of fun and by design, looking at where I wanted to see Ricochet go, and a great way to have an incredible match with those two that had a result that really worked for everybody. This year, with Darby being in the tournament, he's a very prominent person, and I was thrilled to have Darby Allin in. And my thought was, he's going to be a huge part of this Gold League. And it immediately, in the first night of the Continental Classic, became a situation where I had to make changes with Darby's injury. And this was, to be honest, more challenging, because I had to tear it apart and put it back together. I didn't have to make as many changes to the schedule or the ideas. If you really look at who was wrestling who in the results and the story with Juice Robinson and Commander, they wrestle a totally different style. But as far as the scheduling and how this affects the tournament, I think it was a bigger shift with Darby. I'll tell you that I did make more scheduling changes, and this affected the flow of the tournament even more than the injury the year before. And again, each year I'm very fortunate it's only been one injury, with the amount of things I need to change and how intricate the scheduling I do and the planning I do for this tournament is. I'm really proud of where we're at now with the Continental Classic and the big tie atop the Gold League, and a situation in the Blue League where you still have a lot of competitors in the mix fighting for that spot at World's End. So I love putting the tournament together. It's a lot of math and notes, but as I talked about before, this is the kind of stuff I've loved doing since I was a kid. I think that the 3 points for a win, 1 point for a draw nature adds a lot of excitement to the tournament. A lot of interesting scenarios can unfold. The best thing about the tournament to me is the quality of the wrestlers in it. It's just an absolute group of world-class stars putting on tremendous matches week in, week out. And we're very fortunate to have these great wrestlers in AEW. And I'm very fortunate to be able to work with so many great people and to be able to fight up these schedules and make these matches for such a loyal, incredible group of fans that really loves watching them year in, year out. So I love the Continental Classic. I'm very excited about the Wednesday Night Dynamite show, which again is on early this week. I'd be remiss if I didn't mention Dynamite on at 6 p.m. Eastern this Wednesday night with the Christmas Eve schedule, and then Collision on Christmas night at 9 p.m. I think these are great opportunities for us, hopefully, to make some new fans. I know there's going to be at least some AEW fans out there putting these shows on TV with their families and friends around the holidays, and it's a great chance for us to make some new fans, because I know this is going to be really impressive action in the Continental Classic, and what a great thing for AEW fans to be able to show off to their loved ones and be proud of their interest, because these are great shows. I know I can be proud to show them. I know that I can be proud to show them to my own family around the holidays. And I hope that you could all feel proud to show AEW Dynamite and AEW Collision on Christmas Eve and Christmas respectively to your families. And in particular, this great action in the Continental Classic and all this exciting and tremendous development going into AEW World's End. Thanks for asking, Mike.
Thank you, Tony. Next up, we have Sean Ross Sapp with Fightful, and I'm going to follow that up with a write-in from Dominic D'Angelo with Studio One Sports. Sean, go ahead.
Hey, Tony. If you don't mind getting in the weeds on the news that you dropped this week about talks with MSG to host the first Dynamite, is there any type of timeline you can provide on that? Because I know that the night that Dynamite debuted, there was a Carrie Underwood concert there. But I also know that months before that, you had trademarked Tuesday Night Dynamite. Would this have meant that AEW would have maybe debuted on a different date? Or was it early enough to where Tuesdays were still a possible consideration for Dynamite?
Well, it's a really good series of questions, Sean. And you're very insightful and well-prepared. It's been many, many years. We're talking about conversations from over 6 years ago, closer to 7 years ago. And I think that's probably right. I got a call from somebody who no longer works there, who I still have a very good relationship with, who still works in a building and actually works in a building that we frequent. And he had called and said, I really would love to have AEW here, and we'd love to be the home of the first Dynamite. And it was after the announcement of AEW, so this would have been in early 2019. And we hadn't scheduled the first show yet. We hadn't really announced the first show yet. But there was certainly excitement around it and hype around it. And this would have been after the January first announcement at the start of 2019, and I think after the January 8th announcement in Jacksonville. So I think that's quite possibly the case, Sean, but I was offered to go there and we were all really interested in it. And once we started to have more calls about it, they called me back and said, we were really excited about it, but after doing more research, probably not going to be viable for us. We thought it was a great idea, but and that's where, and I have respect for the person who called me. He said, it's not me, him being him in this case. He was very apologetic and very nice about it. And I told him, you know, it's nothing personal against him. And I understood why his bosses felt that way. And we've gone on to be very successful and have a lot of great places and homes all over the world for pro wrestling, including around New York. And there have been a lot of changes, and I'm always open to talk to people and brainstorm and think about different ideas with them. But the person here is a fan of AEW. The person who called me is a nice guy, and I don't think he was trying to do anything hurtful or switch things around for us. It was probably a well-intentioned thing. And since then, he's gone on to work other places, and still somebody that has a good relationship with AEW. And he's somebody that works in one of the major professional wrestling buildings and one of the big sports buildings in the U.S. So I don't think it was anything nefarious at all, but you know, it's a good thought, Sean. I think that could be what it was, actually. Thanks for asking.
Thanks, Sean, and thank you, Tony. I have a write-in here from Dominic D'Angelo with Studio One Sports, and we're going to follow that with Josh Nason from the Wrestling Observer. So, Tony, Dominic writes, the Continental Classic has already had some great matches. Would just love some clarity on what specifically is at stake for the winner. Everything laid out, is it the unified title, a title match down the line? Can you lay out just everything exactly involved with the stakes for the Continental Classic?
Yes, the Continental Classic is a fantastic tournament. I love the great action, and I certainly don't have to tell you that I love wrestling. And the Continental Classic provides great wrestling and great prestige, with the tournament winner having outlasted 11 other of the top competitors in a grueling tournament. And being the tournament winner in and of itself, I believe, is a great prestige. It's something the fans look forward to. It is 30 matches in the Gold League plus Blue League, along with three big matches at World's End, the semifinals and the finals, 33 total matches, one winner out of the four semifinalists that are going to World's End. It's going to be four great wrestlers competing for the two final spots, and the winner will be the AEW Continental Champion. In this case, Kazuchika Okada holds both the Continental title that he successfully earned winning last year's tournament and has gone on and defended since, along with Kazuchika Okada also at AEW All In Texas captured the international title from Kenny Omega. He defended them at times as a unified championship. When I grew up as a kid, I saw Dr. Death, Steve Williams, and Terry Gordy as unified tag team champions. And maybe that affected me, seeing those two titles and always hearing JR and Tony and Cowboy Bill Watts talk about them as the unified titles. So to me, when I saw Kazuchika Okada, who in my opinion is one of the most incredible wrestlers ever, and in this setting, a tournament, I think Kazuchika Okada is the greatest tournament wrestler ever. There's a very valid claim to that when you see that Kazuchika Okada has won four G1s, along with last year's Continental Classic. It's five major tournaments. I think the Continental Classic and the G1 are, in my own personal opinion, the two top tournaments in pro wrestling. So winning this tournament, it's great prestige. The tournament has evolved and grown throughout the years, and its prestige has only become stronger. And to me, the G1 and the C2 are the best tournaments. Masahiro Chono has five wins in the G1, and Kazuchika Okada has four G1 wins along with the Continental Classic. So to me, they are the only two men ever to have five such tournament wins. And with a win in this Continental Classic, Kazuchika Okada, in my opinion, could slam that door shut with his sixth major tournament win and being the only man to win the G1 and the Continental Classic. Now, there's another G1 winner still in the mix here going into the final week, and that is the IWGP World Champion, Konosuke Takeshita, the Alpha, who is the reigning IWGP World Champion and the reigning G1 winner, could also potentially become the only person to win the G1 and the Continental Classic in the same year, as well as joining Okada as the only person to win both tournaments. So I think it's a very interesting and prestigious field, and a lot of potentially fascinating scenarios that could still unfold on Christmas Eve and Christmas and World's End. The winner of this tournament will be the Continental Champion. There's potential, if Okada wins, he would retain both sides of that unified title. But to have all of these great wrestlers in this field competing for the Continental Championship, I think it speaks to the prestige of the championship and the tournament, and those will only continue to grow as the reputation of the Continental Classic is getting better and bigger every year, I think. So thanks for asking.
Thank you, Tony. We've got time for just two more questions here. So Josh Nason with the Wrestling Observer is up next, and then followed by Kevin Kellum with Sports Kita. Josh, go ahead.
Thank you. Hey, Tony. I'm so tempted to ask about whether you would test the sickos and run a pay-per-view on Christmas Day, as you'll have the opportunity to do in 2027. But I will save that for another time. I'm curious about free agents. And something I look through all the headlines on our website at the end of every year for this year in review series I do. And one thing I've noticed, a trend in the past few years, is a lot of WWE talents re-signing with the company rather than trying free agency. And free agency is so different in pro wrestling, as you know, as it is to like the Jaguars, you know, the NFL or soccer or anything in these other sports you work with. It's just this weird kind of thing where it just doesn't happen, I think, due to no unions and a bunch of other different reasons. I was curious, how do you make AEW more of an attraction for people to say, I want to kick the tires and at least explore this? Is there really anything you can do, or is it simply just a case of it's just the way the industry is, and if people are willing to jump, they'll do it, but in that case, they're just willing to stay what they are? Kind of what is your view on that, being in this for 6 years and having seen people go over there, people come there to your group, and vice versa?
Well, it's a great question. I think that we have a really tremendous locker room right now, and I'm very, very happy right now with the group we have in AEW, and it feels like the strongest the locker room has been internally, but also the best the quality of the TV wrestling has been. I think I've gotten so much amazing feedback from the fans about how strong this year of AEW has been, and we're into the home stretch, and it's the fourth quarter, and we're going to deliver a tremendous World's End event with this roster. I think it's a fun question and to think about the free agency, but the truth is, I thought that this year it wasn't all about trying to take big swings and bring in it wasn't about trying to turn over and change all of AEW and bring in all the free agents. It was about bringing in people that were complementing what we do and have been very additive to AEW. So we've had tremendous free agents come in this year, whether it was individuals like the Jet, Kevin Knight, or Speedball Bailey, who have been great as a team in Jet Speed, but also great individual wrestlers. They were great singles wrestlers when they came here, and they still are great singles wrestlers. I think they're great together as Jet Speed, a team I put together here with them, but also I think that separately they're fantastic individuals, and they only continue to get better, and they're two of my favorites in the Continental Classic tournament right now, and they've both been great free agent signings. Tekla is somebody who's come in here and has been a top contender, has wrestled top stars, and has picked up wins over some of the best women in AEW, competed in some of the most exciting matches, including the Blood and Guts match this year in Greensboro, North Carolina, which was a really successful AEW Dynamite for us. And the free agents that have come in have been very effective. So I do like having free agent signings. And this year, I think it's been maybe the best philosophy yet. Certainly, we're dealing from I think, a place of strength, because in 2025, we have so many great wrestlers in AEW. Some of the best women and men in the sport are wrestling in AEW already this year, and now with these additions, we've only gotten stronger and better. And people love wrestling in AEW. It's a great place to work, in my opinion, but also it's a shared opinion by a lot of people that work here. And I'm very proud of what we do with AEW, and I'm very proud of the wrestlers that have been here already going into this year, but certainly the people that have joined us along the way have been very positive additions. And they've all come in with where I wasn't looking to completely overhaul AEW. I was really excited about what's happening in 2025 in AEW. So again, the people I brought in have been to complement what we already have going and make it better. Thanks for asking.
Thank you, Tony. And thanks, Josh. One last question today is from Kevin Kellum here with Sports Kita.
Hi, can you guys hear me?
Yeah.
Yes.
All right, cool. Just want to check on that. Obviously, AEW World's End has a lot of exciting talent we've seen on TV in quite some time. MJF returned. That was exciting. But obviously, fans ask, oh, who else could return? And there's other talent we've seen on AEW that maybe we haven't seen in quite some time. Specifically, could you talk to the status of talents we haven't seen in quite some time, like a Keith Lee, a Danhausen, or Nyla Rose? I know some of them have been dealing with injury issues as well. Obviously, a lot of people are excited about what they can see, but it's always what can happen next. Fans always asking, Tony.
Well, can you maybe I cut out for part of your question. Can you maybe ask that again? I lost you at the very beginning.
Sure. Specifically, people are excited about the show coming up this weekend and who we've been seeing on television, and fresh off a return of MJF, fans want to know about other possible returns to AEW, especially with the new year coming up. Specifically, names we haven't seen in quite some time, like Nyla Rose, Danhausen, and Keith Lee.
Sure. I thought I just wanted to make sure I heard you right. And
I probably said it too fast. Yeah.
No, not at all. Not at all. There was a part where the audio cut out for me, so I just didn't hear it. And then when it picked back up, it picked up in the middle of the names. So I just, yes. Well, I'm very excited about having this group together on pay-per-view. It's going to be a great World's End. We saw one former world champion return, and there's some great former champions that have been away and great stars that we haven't seen in a while. I think anytime we can bring somebody that's been very accomplished and loved by the fans in AEW back onto the show, that's a really positive thing. So in this case, there was a lot of excitement around seeing MJF back and in the mix with all these great former and current champions vying for the top spot. And anytime we can bring a big name like that back, there's going to be a lot of excitement. And right now it's a great group that's working together very well, but certainly I am interested in bringing in more names, some of the great names from the past, and fitting them into these exciting situations we have, but also looking at new wrestlers as well. And I think that's been a key to AEW this year, is reintegrating some of our top stars who've been away, sometimes from injuries, and also bringing in some new stars, as I mentioned in the last answer, to complement what we have that's working so well in 2025 for AEW. Thanks for asking.
Thank you, Tony. Well, that wraps up our time today. Tony, do you have any closing thoughts here before we close out?
Yeah, I really am very grateful to the fans. I hadn't talked much about it in the questions, but I'd like to address the Sports Illustrated Awards. I'm really proud that the panel of journalists working at Sports Illustrated voted AEW the winners of 10 awards, including so many prestigious awards. I'd like to say that I'm very grateful that the Sports Illustrated voters would choose AEW as their pick for so many great things, including Mercedes Moné being the Female Wrestler of the Year, Hangman Adam Page, the Male Wrestler of the Year, FTR, the Tag Team of the Year, the Best In-Ring Wrestler, Will Ospreay, the Best Wrestler on the Microphone, Timeless Tony Storm, the Breakout Wrestler of the Year, Kyle Fletcher, the Storyline of the Year, the Redemption of Hangman Adam Page, the Rivalry of the Year, Hangman Adam Page versus Jon Moxley, the Show of the Year, AEW Double or Nothing 2025, and the promotion of the year, AEW, All Elite Wrestling, best wrestling promotion of the year in 2025, as voted by the journalists at Sports Illustrated. I'm very proud of those 10 awards. I think they all represent great achievements for so many people. And in particular, AEW being named best wrestling promotion, that's an achievement that everybody here can share in. If you're a fan of AEW, if you're a wrestler in AEW in particular, the staff of AEW, all of us are really proud of that. And everybody who has laced up a boot, stepped into a ring, worked in any aspect of the production, the ring truck, the announcers, the production staff, and of course, again, the fans of AEW, everybody shares in that award. And I think we can all be really proud to have such a storied and prestigious publication as Sports Illustrated, with its great reputation. And I talk about being a fan since I was a kid of sports and wrestling. I've been reading Sports Illustrated since I was 6 years old in the school library. And whether it was SI or SI for kids, I've always loved Sports Illustrated. And to have Sports Illustrated name AEW the best wrestling promotion in the world and honor so many of our wrestlers, teams, rivalries, matches, pay-per-views, it's really cool. And I'm very proud of that. So I wanted to note that. And I'm very grateful for all of you. This has been my favorite year working in pro wrestling yet. I'm really grateful to all of you being on this call today. I love this time of year. I love the holidays and the Continental Classic. And pro wrestling goes 52 weeks a year. So I'm talking with all of you and enjoying fielding your questions and doing interviews with you between shows and when we're not on these calls, talking about AEW, talking about wrestling. I love it. And it goes year round, but I love that. And I love that even through the holiday season, we're always putting on shows. It's always there for the fans whenever they want to watch AEW. And this year we've had incredible support from our fans. And also we've had incredible coverage from you. So I'm very grateful to all of you being here today, even with the big holiday week and asking questions. I'm also grateful to you covering AEW and our events. It's been great spending this hour with you talking about AEW wrestling. I've tried to answer just about as many questions I could in this hour, but I really hope to see some of you at World's End, and I'll try to stay after. It's going to be a great weekend, I think. I'll try to stay after and answer as many questions as I can and hopefully see some of you there. Or we'll try to get all your questions on the next media call. But I hope you all have a very happy holiday season. I'm very excited about Christmas and being able to watch AEW on Christmas Eve with my family, and then AEW again on Christmas with my family. It's going to be really a fun week for us, and I hope you all have a fun week too. Thanks for doing this call. Danny and Robin, thank you for working on this call on your holiday week and being here and moderating this for us, and I thought it was tremendous. I really appreciate everybody giving AEW these opportunities and for us to be named the pro wrestling promotion of the year and be accumulating some of these awards. I'm very grateful for it, and I'm very appreciative, and thank you all for being here. Thanks, Danny.
Thank you, Tony. And thank you, everybody. We're now at the end of our time. We'll be distributing an audio recording to all attendees shortly. We thank you again for being a part of today's call, and we're looking forward to you joining us for AEW World's End in Chicago this Saturday. Have a wonderful holiday and have a great rest of your week. Thanks.